Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back. Today, we're diving deep into a book that really took the world by storm a few years back. Alex Michael Leeds' debut, The Silent Patient. It wasn't just popular, it shot straight to number one. A real phenomenon.
Oh, absolutely. And you can really feel Michael Leeds' screenwriting background, can't you? It's got this incredibly sharp, almost cinematic quality to the pacing. You barely have a moment to breathe. Our sources definitely point to that structure as key.
Exactly. So our mission today isn't just to recap the plot. We want to unpack the mechanics. How does Michael Leeds play with us, the readers, using that classic unreliable narrator technique? And how does he weave in the ancient Greek myth of Alcestis so effectively into this very modern story about trauma and ultimately betrayal?
Okay, so let's set the scene. It starts with this incredibly chilling premise. You have Alicia Berenson, successful painter, seems to have it all, who shoots her husband, Gabriel, 5 times in the face.
Mm.
And then nothing. Yep. Complete silence.
Yeah, it's brutal. And that silence is just absolute. It makes her this object of intense public fascination, almost obsession.
She won't talk to anyone, not the police, not in court. So she's deemed unfit for trial, and they send her to the Grove. It's a secure forensic psychiatric unit in North London.
And the setting itself, right, this closed institution, it immediately signals that we're entering a space where, you know, truth and sanity might be pretty fluid concepts.
Definitely. And then he walks in. Our narrator, Theo Faber, he's a criminal psychotherapist, and his interest in Alicia, well, it goes way beyond just professional curiosity. It's like an obsession. A fixation.
He's convinced he's the only one who can get her to talk. He actually takes a job at the Grove specifically to treat her.
Which immediately raises some, some flags, doesn't it? His supposed mission is to find out why she did it, why the silence. But even early on, his own narrative feels complicated. It's full of his own issues.
That's where the unreliable narration really kicks in, subtly at first. He presents himself as this empathetic healer. There's that quote he uses, something like, psychotherapy is about love. Loving the patient enough to help them understand the truth about themselves.
Right. But then you get glimpses of his own life. Deep insecurities, definitely controlling tendencies, and this consuming paranoia about his wife, Kathy, and whether she's cheating on him.
Exactly. It's this huge irony, isn't it? He's trying to heal someone whose trauma is rooted in betrayal, while his own life is completely unraveling because of the very same thing.
It's a classic misdirection. We, the readers, tend to overlook it because he's the narrator, the professional, the one guiding us. We trust his perspective. We assume he's the sane one in the room.
He's using his job, essentially, to mask his own dysfunction. Meanwhile, Alicia is the silent enigma at the center of it all. We only really get to know her through fragments, right? What other people say, her paintings, which are quite intense.
And crucially, her diary.
Yeah.
That diary becomes her voice from the past.
Initially, though, her silence just looks like pathology. Like, she's completely broken down. But the novel cleverly reframes it, doesn't it? It becomes less about madness and more like self-preservation, a shield.
A wall, yeah. Against abuse, past and present. And then there's Gabriel, the husband, the victim. Initially, he seems like the loving, successful partner.
But as Theo starts digging and the diary entries unfold, we see a very different picture. Duplicitous, narcissistic. He's deeply implicated in the tragedy himself.
So Theo decides, you know, regular therapy isn't cutting it. He starts playing detective, really crossing ethical lines. He goes outside the Grove, interviewing Alicia's art dealer, Gabriel's brother, a cousin.
And you have to question his motives here, right? Is he really gathering information to help Alicia therapeutically? Or is he looking for evidence to confirm his own theories, theories that serve his narrative?
It feels like the latter. He uncovers Alicia's childhood trauma, her father's cruelty after her mother died, and then the father's suicide. It explains her vulnerability, sure, but Theo seems to use it mostly to label her as fundamentally damaged.
But the diary, that gives her back her agency, her voice, it makes her human. You read about her genuine love for Gabriel, how their marriage started to fray, her growing fear about this masked man she thinks is watching her.
And then the devastating discovery of Gabriel's affair. It's all there in her words.
And that leads us right to the mythological core of the book. Alicia's last painting, the one she finished just before the murder, is a self-portrait titled Alcestis. This isn't just a detail, it's like the key.
Ah, yes, Alcestis. It unlocks so much thematically.
Could you remind us why that myth is so significant here for anyone maybe not familiar with it?
Sure. So in Greek mythology, Alcestis is this woman who agrees to die in place of her husband, Admetus. He gets to live, she goes to the underworld. Later, Hercules fights death and brings her back. But when she returns, she's silent. She won't speak. Or maybe she can't.
Wow. The parallels are just staggering. Alicia sees herself in that story, sacrificing herself for her husband, only to be emotionally, if not physically, annihilated by his selfishness.
Exactly. Her silence isn't madness. It's the trauma of realizing her sacrifice meant nothing. Or worse, that she meant nothing to the person she sacrificed for. It reframes everything.
So this understanding, this connection to the myth, it gives Theo an opening, or rather a weapon. He uses the knowledge of the affair to try and provoke a reaction from her in a therapy session.
And it works. Sort of. She finally speaks. Just fragmented words, though, blaming the masked man for the murder. For a moment, you, the reader, might think, okay, breakthrough.
But it's a false climax, isn't it? The real story, the devastating truth, is hidden in the final pages of her diary, which, thankfully, she manages to get to someone else later.
In that final entry. That's where the whole narrative just explodes, the twist that defines the book. Yes, the masked man did break in, but his motive, revenge, because Gabriel was sleeping with his wife.
But the ultimate betrayal, the thing that truly breaks Alicia, isn't just the affair itself, it's what happens next. The masked man forces Gabriel into a choice, your life or your wife's.
And Gabriel, he chooses himself. I choose me, killer. That's the moment of emotional annihilation for Alicia, yeah. Hearing that. Knowing she's utterly disposable to him.
The masked man leaves then, his damage done psychologically. Then Alicia picks up the gun and shoots Gabriel. The silence that follows. It's the only possible response to that level of trauma, that betrayal.
And the final gut punch reveal. The masked man, the narrator, the obsessive therapist trying to save her. It was Theo Faber all along.
Unbelievable. His wife, Kathy, was the one having the affair with Gabriel.
So his entire therapeutic mission at the Grove, it wasn't about healing Alicia at all. It was this deeply narcissistic, twisted attempt to cover his own tracks, to manipulate her, maybe hoping she'd implicate herself further or just break down completely, silence forever.
The sheer audacity of it, trying to silence the victim of his own psychological violence. And when he realizes during her supposed breakthrough that she might have recognized him.
He tries to silence her permanently. An injection of morphine, staged to look like a suicide attempt.
But Alicia gets the last word. Not through violence, but through her writing. Before Theo could kill her, she'd already passed that final diary entry to another patient.
And that's his undoing. The novel ends with Theo exposed, caught, confined himself ironically, at the Grove, silenced by Alicia's written testimony. A kind of perfect, chilling justice delivered by the person he tried to destroy.
It's such a powerful execution of the unreliable narrator. You spend the whole book inside Theo's head, trusting his professional judgment, his perspective, and then that rug pull, that intellectual and emotional whiplash, as our source material puts it. It's intense.
Absolutely. And beyond just the clever plot twist, it's a really disturbing look at the abuse of power in a therapeutic setting. Theo exploited transference, that deep trust a patient often places in their therapist, purely for his own manipulative, vengeful ends.
It definitely makes you think about professional ethics, but also about self-deception, doesn't it? Could Theo have actually convinced himself on some level that he was helping her, or that his actions were justified, that he was the hero?
It's possible. The capacity for self-deception is terrifyingly vast. The book also does such a brilliant job analyzing silence itself. Alicia's muteness isn't just passive, it transforms. It starts as a symptom of trauma, but it becomes a form of resistance, almost an act of force.
Like that idea of silence being like a mirror reflecting yourself back at you. For Theo, it kept reflecting his own guilt, his own narcissism, didn't it? Until it ultimately broke him.
And making the written word the diary, the final, undeniable truth. That feels incredibly significant. It suggests that a voice preserved on paper can ultimately hold more power, more permanence than spoken words, especially when the speaker is compromised.
It really stays with you. That feeling of being manipulated not just by a character, but by the narrative itself. It forces you to question how we receive stories, who we trust, and why.
It highlights that truth is so often tangled up with perspective, and the person telling the story might be the least reliable source of all. It leaves you pondering. If the real betrayal was Gabriel choosing himself, not the shooting, what does that say about the nature of love and commitment? How fragile is it?
A chilling thought. I think the story teaches us to always, always question the teller, even when they seem trustworthy or authoritative.
And perhaps the quietest voices, or even the silent ones, sometimes hold the most profound truths, if we can find a way to hear them.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.